So, if we come back to the past and we come back to the Ravenhead period, in your mind, would there one key event, one key souvenir that would kind of synthesize this whole period?
No, there have been a lot of key events, actually. When the Ravenhead record was released, we charted at 16, I think, in the German record charts for 4 weeks or something like that. Also Swiss charts. And I think that record was some sort of a turning point for us, actually, because, not turning point, but surpassing the next level. We've been on tour with Hammerfall in the early year. We've been on tour with Powerwolf then. And when we were touring with Hammerfall, we already got the impression, oh, there are a lot of people now that really know about the band, wearing shirts and stuff like that, singing along the songs and stuff.
And so you were the opener, but some date you may have, in fact, switched or go on the same level.
No, not on the same level with Hammerfall. I mean, Hammerfall was still their audience. If you're supporting and got the headliner, you always know that there are more people for the headliner there, obviously. And Hammerfall are doing a great job as well, you know. So, but we really realized, okay, there are a lot of people now that really know who Orden Ungarn is. And I think it was even more with Powerwolf. So a lot of people coming to the shows with Orden Ungarn shirts, then a lot of people like singing along. Have you been on the tour? Like in the Tramador, where was it? Yeah. So that was a great show for us as well. I remember that. Mm-hmm. People singing out loud, very loudly and stuff like that. And so that was really the point, because we had been told over and over again, you have to go out as headliners, you have to play headlining stuff. And we were like, I don't know, mate, let's do another support thing and like build our fan base like bigger and bigger. And especially with the Powerwolf tour, we have been on the point where we said, okay, now this is the time to go out as headliners. And we did that then in the beginning of 2016. And yeah, that worked out very, very good.
Was it one way or the other an expected move? Are you work, you know how the mood, you know the standards you put to yourself and the standards to the band. So one way or the other, was it not a natural evolution in a good way?
It was a natural evolution in the good way, but it was really because you said if there was a... What was the question? If there was a key event?
Key event, yeah. One thing that pops in your mind when you think about Ravenhead?
Yeah, it's really the combination of these three tours then. It's because that was then our first real headline tour in March 2016, I think, and it worked out like really, really good. So this is where we really had the impression for ourselves we've reached the next level. I mean, you know, we did 500-600 people in Germany, you know, per night. This is really, I think the worst show was 270 on a Monday night in Mannheim or something, which is still like very, very good. And so this was like, okay, now the next level is really reached with that.
Is that from one way or the other a relief for you? Just thinking we go in the right direction?
I wouldn't necessarily say relief, it's satisfying. That is, you know,
pride?
I don't actually think I have feelings like pride. I also don't have feelings like jealousy or something like that. I try to keep that away from me. It's just being satisfied, yeah. Being happy with what we've reached or accomplished so far.
If we take a little perspective on that, it seems, in my point of view, that's kind of a revival, or you get very, very strong power metal bands. You get Sabaton, you get Powerwolf, who start to grow, since you use Hammerfall is in kind of a decreasing, but might come back later on. Is that a good era for power metal in general? From your understanding, from even maybe the business point of view?
I think I don't actually think it is about eras that are good for some certain, I mean...
It's trend or maybe fad.
Yeah, I always gave a shit about that, and I think all the good bands always had their following, whether the time was right or not, you know? And I personally have to say I disagree. I mean, personally, of course, you got Powerwolf and you got Sabaton and stuff like that, but that's about it, you know?
It's only the tip of the iceberg and there's nothing...
Yes, That's what I'm talking about. I mean this is basically since we started like growing with On Ugan since 2008 with a Veil record. Who else is there? It's Powerwolf, it's Sabaton, and there are some smaller bands coming, but it's by far not on that level.
All right, so there's big ones, small ones, and
nothing,
not much in between.
Yeah.
All right, as you mentioned, on maybe to the opposite trend of the business, which is it's that what band says or label says, we're selling less and less record. It seemed that Ravenhead was your best selling record.
Yes.
So you go the other way around.
Yes.
How do you explain that? Is that your fans are specially dedicated and buying stuff, or you make sure for each new record with the AFM that you release special boxes, like it or not? But it's there, so I suppose one way or another you find some success. There is even personalized box. You can put your name on the.
I think that is great, actually. Yeah. I really like that idea.
How do you explain that? That you're on the opposite of the larger trend.
The only way I can explain it is that we're even gathering even more fans, you know, so the growing of the record sales is constant. So that
yeah, they could like the old generation, they could Spotify, they could.
And I think this is what I mean, and I think a lot of them actually do. I think it's just even more people that get attached to that, and you get even more of the people that still collect records that are buying those now. Yeah.
Right. When you started to work on Gunman, what was the idea? What was the main thing you wanted to give birth to? I don't know if you talk together, you four guys, where we want to go next, or you come with the idea and then they follow. Or?
No. This time it was. I'm also working as a producer,
yeah?
And I did a lot of work in the last years, so. I didn't have much time to sit down and write stuff, so it was more like, okay, come on, let's get together and just try to make music. And this somehow kicked off really, really great, because if you don't do creative stuff for quite a long time, then you have got the feeling that you have a lot to say at that moment. And so we wrote a lot of songs in a very, very short amount of time. I think like almost the whole record in like 1.5 months or something, so that went very, very quickly, and still it was so that we were satisfied, so that we thought, okay, we keep the quality of the last records. Concerning that concept with the dark fantasy Wild West sort of stuff, it was more like we always wanted to do our dark fantasy Wild West version and when we wrote the first two songs that were Down Here and Vampire and Ghost Town, they some sort of had these Western melodies in it, and so there are some chord progressions and melodies that somehow sound like Western, and so we thought, okay, maybe it's dictated from above, or some forces telling us, okay, now do this Western record.
Because you might like destroy an idea that most of the fan may have, or most of people in metal may have. How collective is the effort of writing songs in Northern Organ? We have the feeling that you write everything, you bring that to the guys, they do next.
It was like this to the end. It changed a lot on Ravenhead. I did a lot more with Dirk, and I did very, very much on Gunman with Dirk. Basically, I wrote all songs with Dirk together, and the title track Gunman and Fields of Sorrow I wrote with Toby. And this is a great thing for me as well, because Toby and me never really clicked when we were trying to make new songs together, at least. I mean, like playing guitar is always great, but if we were trying to work on new ideas, that somehow never had a great outcome. I don't know why. And this time it was a lot better. I think it's maybe because we're together for this long time now, on the road together, and I have the impression that everyone really, really understands now how Orden Ogre should sound like. And so I think this is the reason why it worked out that well then.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but Gunman is the fifth album you have with AFM, you already
yes.
Work with them. So long-term partnership?
Yes.
You imagine that lasting for long, or?
This is actually the last record in our contract.
So you have a deal, and then it's the end of it?
The deal has ended now, and so it's also like a very, very interesting part of our career now, because we can literally choose where we will be going now. And who will be the next partner for that. It doesn't necessarily mean that we won't continue with ALM. It's just that I will, of course, take the advantage and talk to I have the opportunity to speak to all the, let's say, top label managers in the world that we have for heavy metal, and talk to them and see what their visions and ideas are, and also with management and stuff like that. So there will be a lot of business changes by the end of this year, I think, yeah.
Right.
Or not changes.
All options remain open.
Yeah.
If we read the documents that we get with the album, it's written the heaviest and most melodic album from Odin Ogen. Is that some, let's say, promo stuff, or one way or the other, it's also your feeling?
I didn't write that.
And people may have sometimes lots of imagination, or everybody is heavier and always more melodic. So at some point, you don't know how, if, what's your opinion about what is said and spread about your work.
I just had an interview like a few hours ago where somebody said it's not as heavy as Ravenhead was, for example. I don't share this impression. I think Gunman is a pretty heavy record, actually. I wouldn't necessarily say it's the heaviest record in its entirety.
Sometimes it's like, you know, you have the feeling that when you start to work on the album, from the label point of view, what are what the label wants us to believe. You say, okay, you know what, I have all these different ingredients, and this time I want a little more of that, a little less of that. My understanding is not at all how it works. I mean, your creativity flows, it comes this way or this way.
Yeah.
Or if you have a really like, dark concept, obviously the album might be darker than the previous or the next one, because it's based on the concept. Except that, it's your style, your way, the sound of the band, so you have this. If you take the song Gunman, you have some elements which are close to Fever, because you have this melodic beginning, then the guitar starts, you have the riffs and everything. It's very catchy, the chorus, and
thank you.
It's part of your style, I would say.
Yes.
It's your trademark also.
Yes.
Heaviest and more melodic, but I find that as heavy and as melodic as the previous ones.
Yes.
Alright, we agreed. saying about changing a winning team, Andreas Marschall working on that.
For obvious reasons.
It's great work. I mean, the last time we discussed the fact that at the beginning you were pissed by the fact, well, pissed, but you didn't care much, but the comparison with Blind Guardian, and Andreas Marschall was obviously one part of that, this wrong idea at the beginning that that you were linked one way or the other with the band.
I didn't know what that really that was.
What I could read in at the time in the press is that one way or the other, a lot of considered you were kind of followers of not even in the music, it's very different to not at all in the Tolkien stuff, musically or even in your universe. I mean, graphical universe. You and obviously the link was Marshall because he worked for both bands. One way or the other, didn't want you to kind of change the graphic world of the band.
I'll let me clean that up for a second. The first thing is the only legitimate Blind Guardian successor and stuff like that. Actually, there was just one single magazine that said that. Yeah. It was the German Rock Art.
But it just kind of spread, and at the beginning when you look at the band, you had this popping up.
Yes, and that was for the Veil record, 2008, yeah. And for the very same record, the German Metal Hammer wrote, they are the new Running Wild. And so Running Wild and Blind Guardian have nothing alike, except it's melodic, maybe,
yeah,
in heavy metal.
And not even Andreas Marschall.
Yeah, and this is that Andreas Marschall. Okay, yeah. That was AFM put that into the press info because they wanted to say, look, this band has got a unique sound, or Noga has a unique sound, because you can't compare them as Blind Guardian or as the new Running Wild, because you can't compare these two bands with another with each other, you know. So that is one of the reasons why a lot of times people came and approached me and told me, yeah, what about the Blind Guardian? I was like, well, what happened with Blind Guardian? It was one guy of the German press who said the next Blind Guardian, whatever, you know, he's... I don't care about that. And about this, also about this Andreas Marschall connection, I have to say, when we started working with Andreas Marschall, he didn't work for Blind Guardian anymore.
No, it was even, you know, in the period where he wasn't working much for...
He wasn't working much for anyone, yeah? And it was 2008 when we released that Veil record. Basically everybody was doing like digital artworks and stuff like that. And so we were like, okay, this old school German metal stuff like Running Wild, like Blind Guardian, but this was great, the artist was great, and so we got in touch with him, he did that. And Andreas is a great guy, he's doing great work, he's a good friend of ours meanwhile. And so I see totally no reason to change that, you know. I have to say, I love the fact, for example, that I made stick with Derek Riggs for such a long time. And so, no, totally not. I mean, we would change the artist if we had no other chance because of something, because if he's sick and can't work for us or whatever.
So you, it's a very long term, you think, partnership with the...
Personally, for my case, if it works out, we will keep going with him, of course.
Alright. He's obviously very talented.
Yep.
And I mean, so in the past, if we see some other bands who suddenly... Iron Maiden, the first time they left the Riz, it was an awful cover picture, so... Alright. I think last year or 2 years ago, you released Book of Ogun, which was like a package with live stuff and everything. What's the feedback you get from this, and what's your, is that a request from the label, or it's coming from you? At some point you ask yourself, and the stuff is good, but at some point you ask yourself, is that one way to fill the contract, some one extra, you know, or it's really for the fans, or it's in between, or business-wise, does it make sense?
Well, there were several reasons that led to that. The first one is Timo from AFM, he personally always wanted to do, I have to say, he's a big Orton Ogun fan as well. So he always wanted to do a best of after four records.
Okay.
So we were at that point, and I have to say, we had this Hammerfall tour, the Powerwolf tour, and then the headlining tour. So he was like, if we do something that we can release now, we have a new product, we have advertisements, stuff like that, it will work well for the tour as well. That was another point. And the thing was, it turned out the way it turned out because I personally thought it's not cool to just release a best of after four records.
And so you take three songs from each album, yeah, put them all together, that's it, bye-bye.
Yeah, and so my idea was to do this documentary, and because we had a camera and filmed everything since the very, very early days. I don't know, have you seen it, the documentary?
Yeah. To receive it, so I'll receive some links to see it.
Yeah, and the thing is, I thought, yeah, let's do a small documentary, it takes me maybe 2 weeks or something like that, and it took me like 4.5 months full time to get that all together. But it was also great for us ourselves to just revisit all the stages and stuff like that, and I think personally it is a very, very interesting documentary, even for people that are not connected to Orton Ogun, because you can just see how things develop and build up. And so this was the reason why I also could say, okay, this is now is going to be a cool product that we could really release. Yeah.
Right. You shot a video clip for the first song, for the first track, Gunman. I understand it was a good way for you to travel to the US, but except that, So it's obviously not the first one you did. You did The Fever, you did...
Things We Believe In.
Yeah. Each one with a kind of a different little universe. One was apocalyptic, after that it was more creepy swamp stuff, and after that it was their western, kind of creepy western stuff. How fun or not fun is that to do a video clip? Because you're doing again and again and again, and I suppose where, considering the place where you shot it was pretty hot, considering you have all the west, the leather on you. So how fun or not fun was it?
So I just to add, we've been on the 70,000 tons of metal before, so we have been in the States already, so it was perfect timing to go from there to Monument Valley to shoot.
Just a question about that. From the what you can see online on Facebook, what you can read on the magazine, this crew stuff seems to be really nice and fun and everything. From the inside, is that also that fun, nice and everything? Or it's
totally.
Yeah.
Really great. You should go there if you haven't been there.
No.
It was really great. I mean, you of course experience some difficulties, especially technically on that ship, and it's not that easy, you know. Also like sound outside on the pool deck and stuff. If it's very windy, it can really suck and stuff like that. But it's all like one big swimming party all the time, and people are great, you know.
And you can also enjoy. I mean, you have the show, but professional, you have to perform with the right standards. And you can so also enjoy the time, enjoy yourself. Like,
totally.
Okay, you meet guys, but they don't like you have some freedom, you have some respect, so it's okay.
And also, since it is that expensive, you don't have too many very young guys that are like lying in the corner, wasted and puking and stuff like that. Because so it's more of.
30s, 40s guys.
Yeah, there are also people in the 20s and stuff like that, but it's not that. They also, as a musician, it's not that there are a lot of fans that really go on your nerves and stuff like that. That can, of course, happen that people come and say, hey, can we take a picture? But we don't have a problem with that, of course not.
Yeah, sure.
But it's, no, it was really great, so I totally want to go there again.
Okay, so you were in the area, in the US?
We were in the US, and we flew to Salt Lake City, where a friend of us lives, and went from there with a car, road trip to Monument Valley. Shot there.
With all your stuff and the stage stuff,
yes.
And everything?
Yes, yes. It was, the thing is, it was... I think being there in Monument Valley is one of the greatest experiences in my life so far. I mean, we did a horseback ride, and you saw there scenes with the horses and stuff. Mm. And you feel really like this can't be real when you're like riding on a horse through Monument Valley. Feel like a real cowboy. I don't know. You can basically like taste the history of that place. But on the other hand. You have to stay focused, you have to try to get your stuff done in time, and it was really, really, really stressful. We had 2 days, but they went by so quickly that you know, it was like, and it's over.
Because there you only shoot the exterior part of it, I suppose, when it's in a bar, it's back in Germany.
That is back in Germany, that's in an adventure park called Fort Fun, it's in the area where
right.
We live. And that was the perfect fit because we also recorded our drums there, like the real drum recordings
yeah.
for the record. We were looking for a big place because we wanted to have like these 80s snare ambiences,
yeah.
When you hit the snare drum. We were scouting a lot of castles and stuff in our area. There are a lot of old castles and such. And when this Wild West concept came about, a friend of mine said, oh, wait, there's this saloon in Fort Fun. And I was laughing because obviously you don't go to an adventure park and record drums there. But I made an appointment there, and the venue sounds great. It's all wooden and, you know, like great acoustics in there. And also it was in December, so the whole park was completely empty, closed, empty, minus 10 degrees outside. And it's one of the creepiest experiences in my life to be in a completely abandoned adventure park. Yeah.
All right. You worked again with Heiner Frenzel.
Yeah.
Which performed your last two or three clips?
Fever and Things We Believe In. Yeah.
Yeah. He's also working a lot for EFM, like most of the video clips.
After we worked with him, then he got all the other jobs.
Okay, so that's why my question, was it a choice from EFM or...?
No. It's a friend of mine, basically.
Okay.
And Yeah, I mostly I have the main ideas of how to do stuff, and he will most likely always react with, "Oh my God, how am I going to do this in a video clip?" You know, and but he will find a way, and it's a very very good cooperation. For example, he did the first rough cut I think on Thursday last week or something. And I went there on Friday for 15 hours and on Sunday for another 12 hours, so we did
35 hours.
No, 27 hours of fine cut, you know, together. But it was fun, you know, because we're good friends having fun and always mocking each other and stuff like that. And so this is, I think this is one of the reasons why, at least to my taste, our videos turn out to be like really good, because it's a lot of time and effort. And two people that have more or less the same vision, or at least approach to doing things.
And in 2017, how important promo tool is a video clip? Does that remain a key element to promote the band?
I think so. I mean, for me, everything is important. The pictures, the cover artwork, the music, and I like to see it as a one big piece of art that has to fit together. But on the other hand, the music gets you attached to it, to emotionally, and I think the most important promo tool is and will stay the video clip, because that is what attaches people. This is why people say, "Oh wow, I like what they're doing there."
Okay, I don't know if you can answer. Who played Dale in the video clip?
It's a German.
He's not the guy of the band.
No, it's a German actor.
Okay.
His name is.
I might find it in the credit of the.
Yes,
video.
You might find it in the credit. Yeah.
All right. Just to finish on that side, so as you mentioned, you work in production mixing and mastering work. You worked on the legendary years of Rhapsody of Fire,
mm-hmm.
which will be released soon. On the promo documents of this Rhapsody of Fire record, the AFM is emphasizing the fact that you mixed and mastered the record. How important is that from your point of view, that labels are emphasizing these elements that you... Okay, he's the guy from Modern Organ, but putting more the fact that you're not only the guitar player and singer with Organ, but you also have this know-how on to make albums sound great or better or.
I just can speak from my personal point of view. I experience that customers come to me because they want a specific sound, because they like what I'm doing. I would describe it as modern yet natural. I don't try to have overly triggered or unnatural drums and stuff like that. It's very transparent, very punchy. I hear a lot of people that are listening or following my work that I've got some sort of, like, let's say, like a signature sound. That you can really, if you know what I did, that you can really hear, okay, this could be the guy from, you know, that did that. And I think AFM are more or less seeing that as a quality proof for the next Rhapsody of Fire record, because I don't want to say anything bad about the last records, but whatever, but they see it as an improvement to the sound of
For the previous Rhapsody of Fire, it's completely different.
Yeah,
especially okay. At the beginning, I mean, Rhapsody of Fire used to work with German sound,
mm-hmm.
from the beginning, and so the last two or even three records were kind of weak,
mm-hmm.
these elements. So there you find again this power, this energy, even with a clear sound. In the future, in terms of share of your time, would you be 50-50, or would you like 50-50, or you have obviously a very strong period with Odin Hogan, you're on tour and everything, so there it's 90-10, or 100-0, and after that it's quiet on Odin Hogan between tours and
I'm in a very luxurious position, because I can really pick the people I want to work with. I could just go 100% with Odin Hogan, I would still be fine. Money-wise, stuff like that, I don't have to do anything else. And so it is great. I'm just working as a producer because I love doing this. Because I just love doing this job. And love working on music. And I will never be in the situation that I...
Have to?
have to do some of those. And when I was over the Rhapsody of Fire record, I was like, hey, man, I grew up listening to Emerald, so of course I would like to do this project. So I had to find a way, and it was very stressful because it was in the middle of the Ogan production. But
in terms of timing, how long do you need to mix and master the record, such as the Rhapsody of Fire?
Depends. If the Rhapsody of Fire record would have been recorded completely by the 1st of January, how it was planned to be, it would have been like 4 weeks.
So they were late?
They were late, and they re-recorded guitars even in, I don't know, like in March or something like that. So that was one of the things that made this be like really stressful in the end. Because, I mean, they didn't do that on purpose or whatever.
No, for sure.
And of course you have to stay professional, but it was in the middle of the Odd Organ production then, so I had to do it after I was working on that, and so I had like days, I don't know, like 4, 5, 6 weeks that I worked like 18 hours days or something like that. Okay. So basically sleeping, working.
And my last question, imagine you have the choice for the next record you can produce and mix and master. Who would you choose? Which band would you pick? Imagine you have the complete choice. Who would you like to do the next record? Which band or artist or whatever?
Can I take two?
Yeah, sure.
Megadeth.
All right.
Metallica.
All right. For Metallica, that would make you a very rich man, for sure. Megadeth, I suppose, they have a pretty good budget, I suppose. All right, thank you very much.
Thank you. Did you ask me about touring?
No.
Just mentioning it, we will be on tour in October.
October, headline?
Headline.
You know who will be your opener?
Yeah.
Opening band?
Rhapsody of Fire.
Oh, they will open for you?
Yes.
On the whole tour? Or you switch compared to...
No, on the whole tour.
Alright. So October, all around found in Europe. You know already some show in France?
15th of October, Petit Bain.
Paris, yeah, right.
Yes, that's it. I'm there. Most likely there's going to be one more show in France, but it's not set yet, so it can happen.
So hopefully a second show, or minimum is one in Paris.
Yes.
All right, so we'll be there. Thank you.
Great.